What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke. Jack, what's up with you, bro?
How you doing, bro?
Good?
Yes, sir.
For me, you look nice.
Happy to be back. Appreciate you, bro.
You were explaining to me.
I need to get them shoes, though, the LBJs. Shout out LBJ, the
Mad
Max.
Hey, these LeBrons right here, boy. Two twin. I couldn't figure out what sweatsuit to go with because this goes with this one and the other one goes with my other one. But yeah, these motherfuckers clean right here.
You good. You good.
Appreciate you, man. Hey, man, we got a special guest in the building.
Legend.
Man. Legend in the space. We're going to start it off, but obviously we got Wiz Khalifa in the building today.
What's up,
appreciate
dudes?
You coming.
What's up, y'all? Appreciate y'all for having me. Y'all both super fresh. I was like caught up in the freshness. Dang. That's just shit real quick.
Yeah, crazy.
Appreciate that.
2020 was a whirlwind. What did you take from this last year?
For me, it was all about like family time, like balancing, kind of like reconnecting and shit. Mm-hmm. Like I haven't been off of the road in at least like 10 or 12 years. I've been touring consistently, recording consistently, just moving and shaking. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. There hasn't been a time period where I wasn't doing anything. So for me to not be traveling and not going anywhere, it was like a crazy reset. You know what I mean? It hasn't been like that since I was a kid.
Never had that much downtime.
Man, hell no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, especially having to stay in the house too, like not being able to physically go anywhere, be in contact with anybody. It was pretty extreme. But you know, having my 8-year-old is really cool. Like shout out to Sebastian, my son, and you know. Just making sure his life and his routine was kind of going how it should. Mm-hmm. School kept him entertained, so he had to stay on the Zoom school, but also giving him breaks in between that and trying to keep him physical and moving around and just entertained throughout the whole thing. So it was a cool little reset. And, you know, as far as business, I did a lot, you know, business-wise that didn't have to do with music. I started a online restaurant called Hotbox with Wiz.
Been killing.
Yeah, it's delivery only. So we were able to utilize the fact that people weren't, you know, going to sitting down in restaurants. So I was able to do that. My liquor company went up because everybody was at home depressed drinking. Khalifa Kush went up because we was an essential business. And, you know, we've been doing that for years.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of cool little things, acting and television. I'm on a show called Duncanville where I do voiceover, I play this character. His name is Mr. Mitch. He's like a counselor. He's like the cool ass nigga that that all the kids fuck with. But I was able to record two seasons at home. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just sitting right in my backyard in my studio. So yeah, business wise, I got a lot of shit done. I just wasn't able to like physically travel and shit.
Well, that's what they say. I mean, you should, you know, bearing health, come out of this better than you went in.
Yeah, for
like
sure.
I said, we came out a lot better than we went in. Mm-hmm. You know, with blessings and like you said, just being on that grind. So it was definitely for me too, first time. You think we start hooping and traveling at 16, 17, 18, traveling the world for basketball. That was the first time. And then once we retired too, we're both working for news stations. So we're traveling across the country and doing this show. That was the first time I got to sit out and kind of just reflect.
Yeah.
And kind of appreciate life and what was going on and be more of a dad. So I definitely appreciated the reset too, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's over with because that homeschool was stressing me out.
Man, that shit was a movie.
Bro.
I newfound appreciation for teachers, man. Shout out to you teachers out there, man. It's hard to keep too entertained. I couldn't imagine keeping the whole goddamn class entertained.
Yeah,
and but school is needed. Like, you realize, like, yo, they need to be social and they need to learn from other.
It's so much more than just the work. It's the interaction and it's...
I love my son to death, but I appreciate his time at school and man, what they can do for him.
Yeah, he need that teacher.
I pay them for a reason.
And it ain't cheap. So born in North Dakota, you were an Army brat, moved all around, lived in Germany, UK, Japan before settling in Pittsburgh. Talk to us what your childhood and upbringing was like bouncing around so much.
Just being a new kid all the time. Mm. My parents always made sure like I played sports and I did this and that. So I was always like reintroducing myself and like, yo, I'm Cam, I'm this, that, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, growing up, I moved to Pittsburgh because that's where all my family's at. But then I moved away, and then I went other places, and then I came back. So there's a lot of motherfuckers I knew from my childhood that were reintroduced to me when I got older and shit. So it was cool, man. It was fun. I definitely got to experience a lot. And like you said, you went to a high school with like a mixed crowd and shit like that.
No, I went to a high school with all white kids.
Well, you went to high school with white kids.
Yeah.
And I got to mix it up a lot. Like, Pittsburgh is super hood, but like moving around, well, there's inner city and then there's the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And then moving around to in the military families, you get to just mix and mingle with everybody.
Right.
So it was cool. It was fun to be around a lot of different crowds and really just expand, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it helped me out like getting older too to figure out what type of crowd I wanted to associate myself with.
And be able to move in different crowds. See, like my junior high was mixed and then my parents didn't want me to go to school with that crowd, so they put me in the all white high school. So that's really when I learned how to, and people say, because I'm half Italian and half black, like I didn't really start being around white kids until I was like 9 years old. You know what I mean? Like that was new to me. I was around black, Mexican, Asian. So to be able to have both sides and kind of understand how to maneuver, that's how you really, you feel that now. That's how you can move in business and move in different crowds.
Hell
different
yeah. Moves.
That's just important, man.
It helps out a lot.
Definitely important. When did you start writing? When did that become a passion of yours?
I started writing in like third grade, maybe. I got like a lot of older cousins and shit. So I would just be with them. And this was maybe like 96, 97. So like Pac and Biggie had just died. Fucking, you know, Puffy was kind of like that nigga. You know, everything was kind of changing. Music was changing. You had, your really, really mainstream hip hop. And then you had like your hardcore shit like DMX and shit like that too. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace. But like, I remember going and getting his first album, like, as a kid, you know what I mean? So that's the type of shit that I grew up listening to. And my cousins, they would bang like Master P and all of that shit. So I had like a mixture of everything. Right. Mm-hmm. And they would write and they would battle. And man, we listened to so much music, bro. Like we would go online and like fucking get the lyrics and learn the words. And we would all be in the room rapping that shit together. And that's kind of how we, you know what I mean? We first started doing our little thing. And then as time went on, like, my musical taste changed a little bit. I got more into, like, lyrical shit. I had to go back and do my homework because I'm young. I'm only 33. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, like, the early 90s shit, like N.W.A. and Nas and Wu-Tang and all of that, I had to just re-educate myself on that. So that's what I spent my teens doing, like really just listening to like hardcore, like really, really hip-hop shit. Then I got, you know, like 16, 17, that's when I started hustling, making money. So I'm listening to Cameron, State Property, you know what I mean? Like that's my type of shit. So it was just a process of just my own musical taste and then just developing, you know, my own style throughout
your
that.
Your own sound, yeah.
Yeah, but I started writing in third grade.
Who were some of your inspirations? You mentioned some people you were listening to. You know, you said Jay was, you know, instrumental in parts of your game. Who did you try to pattern your game after anybody else's, or you take bits and pieces from people?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I feel like my whole just existence is just a combination of everything that I've seen and love. I love groups. So Bone Thugs and Harmony is one of my favorite groups. Wu-Tang, Dipset, like just the whole, you know, having a whole your own slang and your own logo and your own way of dress, that always influenced me. Busta Rhymes is one of my huge influences. I love his videos and how animated he is. And just being yourself, energy. Performance on stage, crazy. Jay-Z, swag on stage, you know what I mean? So these are all little things that I pick and choose from that I love. Cameron's my favorite artist out of everybody, just as far as like swag, attitude, lyricism. You know, people try to like say that he don't really rap, but you know, he dumbs it down. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Cam's that nigga.
He rap, though.
Yeah, Cam is hard.
Yeah.
So,
he's one of my favorites. I really want him, not to cut you off, I just heard him kind of on, I was listening to J. Cole shit the other day. Shout out J. Cole. And I thought Cam was going to rap. I thought he was going to at least give us 8 bars. He didn't give us no bars. He was just kind of the hype man for the first song. I'm like, yeah, they got Cole and Cam. He got Cam out of retirement, and Cam just kind of hyped it. Didn't even rap.
You got to get Cam to spit, bro.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. So where did the name Wiz come from?
Wiz comes from me always being into technology and shit and just being like a smart dude in general. Like I always was into school. Like my dad made me do like fucking homework projects during like the summertime and shit. So I was always kind of like nerdy, you know what I mean? So that was my first name. It was fully Wisdom. But my dad used to just call me Wiz, and everybody on the block used to be like, yo, that's young Wiz, blah, blah, blah. So it kind of just stuck. And then the Khalifa, my granddad is Muslim. So I got that name when I was real, real young. I just put them both together and then came up with it.
So Jack just converted.
Congrats, bro.
Alhamdulillah. Appreciate it, bro.
Yeah. You said you stopped drinking and all that.
Yep.
That's gangster.
I'm happy. You know what I mean? I'm in a good place.
It's a good place to be.
That's all that matters. Tattoos. When did you realize that that was something that's going to be a part of who you are?
I think I got my first tattoo when I was 16, and it was crazy because my mom actually was like, yo, you don't want to get on tattoo?
Oh, she
Your mom?
Yeah. I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Right?
But, so I got my first one, and then just like, you know, my influences, I was influenced by Lil Wayne and Travis Barker like at the same time.
Yeah, right.
So it was like, how the fuck can I be like Lil Wayne and Travis Barker? I was like, yo, I gotta tap my whole body. Like, literally. I can't just have one or two tattoos. Literally. Like,
what was your first tattoo?
It's right here on my bicep. It's the rap group that me and my cousins had started.
Oh, okay, yeah.
What was it called?
Yeah.
It was called Mammals.
Shout out to Mammals.
It's like being an animal. It's like being a beast.
Yeah, mammal.
I could dig it. So you completely covered? Any more space?
I still got space. Like, I'm still doing my legs and shit.
Them legs hit different.
Oh, yeah.
Do you use any kind of tattoo nummy cream or do, like, what's your routine? Because you got so many, everyone's routines. What's your routine when you get tatted?
I just smoke. I don't like to get too high, honestly. Like, people be like, yo, you get high. That shit makes you freak out when you're getting tattoos.
Like too,
yeah, you
you're
feel
thinking
it too,
about
much.
It too much.
Yeah. And then the time doesn't pass.
You take, because you're counting the moments in your head.
Yeah, being stoned and getting tattoos is like, it's not the best. I like to just have music playing, like just a couple shots. Yeah, it's like a party, you know what I mean? I get tattoos in the studio and shit. Whatever. Like, the more going on, I feel like the better. If it's just me and that person sitting there, it's pretty bad. But I don't use no numbing cream or anything like that.
Get to the money.
Yeah, and that I usually fuck anyway. Up and like try to get like a small tat, and it ends up taking like 8 to 10 hours and shit. So a lot of my tattoos weren't even supposed to be as much as they are. But
most painful tat?
The most painful, I would have to say there's a tie between the back, like anywhere on my back, and my motherfucking feet.
Oh, I got the feet.
I'm not.
What was your most painful? Shin is a mother.
Yeah, the shin's a bitch. Yeah.
Shin hands. I didn't like my hands. My hands swell up like boxing gloves.
Yeah, like boxing gloves.
In between the webbing. Elbows.
Yeah, anywhere ribs. Where there's like that bone popping out where they just hitting the needle with the bone and shit.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan.
Explain the mixtape days, the process of getting your music out there, you know, like on Dadpiff and stuff like that. Explain what was your thought process during that time?
That was a fun time for me. I was really just finding my way, kind of putting people on to what I thought was cool. Still am, but at that time, it was like, there was like a real opening in the game because I had signed to Warner Brothers first. And I really seen like what the industry was like, what mainstream and what, you know, kind of just, we got 10 records, we only like this one. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's difficult to go through as an artist because you love all your shit.
Right, right.
But they'll tell you in a heartbeat, like, nah, like, we don't even want to fucking hear that shit. Like, they'll skip through it, and they only want to hear that one or that two. So that let me know what that was like. But that also let me know that I didn't want to be that type of artist where it was just that song. You know what I mean? Like, I was more concerned with the substance and the content, and I could make that song as well. So it's like, how do I entertain the building, like make them happy to where they'd be like, yo, Wiz is the shit, but still keep my fans be like, yo, this nigga is killing it. This nigga freestyle, this, that, and the other thing. And that's more where the mixtape mentality comes in, where it's like, I get ideas every day. And it's just me being creative. And social media gave me an outlet to literally just act on all of those ideas as soon as I feel them. So if I wake up in the morning and I hear an Al Green sample, you know, I can listen to it, show people on the internet, go to the studio, record it that night, put it out on the internet, and shoot a video for it showing me recording it. And it just, like, involved everybody in the process and made it more real to the point where a lot of artists weren't doing that at the time. So, it became an experience, and it's fun for me. I love this shit. So, you know, it's something that I'll always be into. I love making albums, but mixtapes and just fun shit, you know, content for the fans. That's always where my heart's gonna be at.
Yeah, see, that's what I was gonna ask. I mean, you have some legendary mixtapes. I mean, legendary. Like, we was bumping your shit before you came, not just because you were coming, because like your mixtapes have always gone so hard. So what is the difference between preparing for a mixtape and then, like you said, a studio album?
Right. For a mixtape, it's more of my own ideas in the production. If I'm working with this producer or these types of beats or this sound is what I'm going for, I'm able to just lock in and just do that. No interruptions, no distractions. And when I put it out, is what I want it to be. Especially before streaming went crazy, because that made it harder to like sample songs and things like that. They'll come back and get at you later. But an album is more like a collaboration. You have to work with people who are great at what they do. So, you know, me coming in the game wanting to make hits, I'm not going to do it with an unknown producer. I have to do it with somebody who's made hits. I have to get in a room with somebody who's actually, you know, had a few number one records before. And it's just a process of figuring out who works and who doesn't and who likes this song and who doesn't. It's more of a team effort. And that's all the difference is to me.
Talk to us about the Taken From Us Too Soon, Mac Miller.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
That's my little homie, man. I love Mac.
Y'all went to the same school?
Yeah, we went to the same high school, but he was younger than me. So when I was out of school, he was doing his thing. But I always appreciated him and still do, because I got to watch him come up. Like, I got to see him be like an excited, you know, kid in the studio, fucking couple dollars for some studio time, to being a global fucking superstar. You know what I mean? And you don't get to witness that a lot of times. Like, sometimes you'll just meet a nigga like when they're on their way up or blah, blah, blah. But I actually seen his whole process. And he's really, really talented. Like, he played all of those instruments and he wrote, and he was really passionate about his music. And that's the thing that I love from him the most, is his, like, his raw talent.
So you drop your first CD, Show Improve, in 06. How does life change after that? Or what's, because you got into, kind of had a falling out with Warner Brothers.
Right.
But explain that process and where you were in your life at that time.
Shit, I was still in high school, so it was like, my dad was like, nigga, what the fuck you doing rapping? Like, that's cool, but you need to go to college or some shit like that. And I'm like, nah, I'm gonna do this rap shit. Like, going back and forth to New York, they had this thing called the Breeding Ground back then for all hip hop. That was one of the major sites. Just kind of like just running up in buildings and taking, you know, meetings and kind of just meeting artists at that time who were on the come up. I remember B.O.B. was one of the artists who was on the come up at the time. Kids in the Hall, they from Chicago. The New Boys, like, they from out here. Just random motherfuckers. Like, it was cool being in that scene and kind of, you know, just trying to figure it all out. But I don't think any of us knew exactly what the fuck we were doing. We were just figuring it out.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
So Say Yeah was a hit. What was that like? What was that experience like?
I was signed to Warner, so I had met with everybody. I met Tom Wally, who signed Tupac, so they was like all hyping that shit up, and he kind of just like walked in the room and looked at me and then walked out of the room, and I was like, fuck. But it was cool. Like, it was a process for me. I feel like that was more work than anything. I got to see how to, like, you know, do the radio thing, and any artist, I don't think nowadays they get the opportunity to really learn, like, how to talk to DJs or do meet and greets and program directors and the importance of that shit and, like, building those relationships. That's what Say Yeah was for me. It was like a relationship builder where I met a ton of DJs, a ton of motherfuckers who, like, you know, that might have been their first interview at the time, and then they went on to become bloggers or this or that or presidents. And, like, it was just a good time to just put down that groundwork and that foundation.
So you went the indie route after the Warner Brothers situation didn't work?
I started doing my thing independent. But it really wasn't like a bidding war because I was already making so much money on my own. I didn't want to sign. Like, I was just like, I wasn't taking no meetings. I wasn't really talking to anybody. And Zvi, who was the A&R at Atlantic, he had got with my manager at the time, Benji, and they had a conversation. And Benji was like, I'm just going to bring him to the show. I'm like, bring him to the show, but do not introduce him to me or none of that. Like, I don't want to meet him. And he's seen the performance. He's seen, like, everything. And he kept flying back to Pittsburgh and was just, like, begging me, like, yo, please, I know you hate labels, but we're going to do it right this time. We're going to give you a shit ton of money. We're going to leave you the fuck alone and let you have your own direction, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, fuck it. I'll go meet with Atlantic and see what they're talking about. And then when I met with them, I met Julie, Craig, Kaiser, and all of them. And I was like, oh, they actually kind of really fucking cool. And that's when my team came along, like Marsha and like Emmanuel. And there was a lot of people who, if it wasn't those individual motherfuckers, I wouldn't have done what I did. Like, you know what I mean? So it definitely had to do with the people as opposed to just, you know, signing a deal. Yeah.
What was the first thing you bought? I know, you know, when I first got, I was drafted almost the second to last pick in the draft, and I got a Vans for 25 racks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I come from the block, so 25 racks was
made it
a million to me, especially cash.
Hell,
and then it's
yeah.
coming from a check. You know what I'm saying? It's free money to me. I ain't had to work for it or run from the police for it. So I went, picked up my homeboy, Mike Bibby, his sister, my brother. We went to the mall. Every pair of Air Max, Polo, I left out of there with probably about 2,000.
Damn. That's cool.
What you did when you got your first big check?
First big check.
2,000, huh?
Yeah, ran out. I'm talking about
my first big check, I bought the yellow and the black zigzag chains.
Yeah.
And I bought the black and yellow Challenger. That's what I did. My first big check.
Yeah. Dope.
And then I wrote black and yellow right afterwards.
Yeah, classic.
Because I had to get the money back.
Smart man.
Definitely did. So talk to us about that process. Black and yellow. It inspired the Pittsburgh Steelers. They end up going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right after that, it's been. You did a purple and yellow, but talk to us about where that came from and just that the vibe and the wave that was on it, and it was your hometown team.
Yeah. That was crazy because I always wanted, like, I look at people's moments in their careers and shit like that, and they say you gotta, like, mimic the greats to become a great. But just me, I know what a standout fucking moment is.
Right.
So I look at what people's moments are, like Snoop, you know what I mean, when he came out and his first video and he's running from the dog catcher, he turned to the dog and he's like on top of the record store and everything. It's like, that's the monumental Snoop Dogg moment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's songs like from Snoop's like Gin and Juice, like that'll never, ever, 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 ever go away.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm creating my first single, now mind you, I'm coming off of Cushion Orange Juice and I hate record labels, but I'm like, okay, cool, I'm back in the building, I gotta make a single. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna walk in here with a mixtape record, I gotta make a single. So my idea of a great single and something that's a standout moment is something that represents my city, because I love Pittsburgh so much. Everybody from Pittsburgh, we love our city. We rep 412, black and yellow all day. So that was my initial thing, was like, okay, I'm gonna go in here and I'm gonna write a hit about my city. The actual words and the beat and all that shit, that just came from up above. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's magic how that stuff happens. But the intention was there. It was like, make a hit, make it be your standout record. I recorded that song in maybe June, and Black and Yellow didn't come out until August, I think. And that whole time, the Atlantic was trying to get me to record more and more songs. They're like, we need another, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, nah, that's the one. So eventually they went to radio with it, and it had a really, really slow start. Like, it started off super, super slow, but it picked up a little bit more. I went on tour, I went to jail, Steelers started winning, a couple things just made, you know, my name, I think at the time I was one of the most Googled names, like, in the world, just off of the uniqueness and, you know, just me smoking weed and doing what the fuck I wanted to do. So all of that combined, boom, black and yellow, Steelers. I think they went to the Super Bowl like the same week that the shit went number one.
Mm.
So it was crazy.
Perfect.
It was like I said, it all came from above. It was a blessing, but it was definitely like intended to be, you know, my moment from the beginning.
Rolling Papers debuts 2011. Is the 10-year anniversary. What stand out from that, and what are some of your favorite songs on that album?
My favorite songs on there are like The Race, On My Level, Start a Show. Shit, we had the deluxe come out, and there's a Nipsey verse on there that I remember getting from him. He was at my house and he recorded that. That was just a special album. It was a fun time. Black and Yellow was on that album. Like I was saying, I was coming off of the mixtape stage. So everything that I was doing, I had intentions on, you know, it sticking and it lasting for a minute. And the fact that the album came out 10 years ago and people are, you know, still talking about how classic it is and what it means to them and what it, how it changed them, that makes me happy for what I did with that project.
You spoke on Nip. I know you guys had a unique friendship. He was an instrumental in your life, very welcoming. You guys really vibed. Talk to us about your relationship with him.
Yeah, Nip was my partner. That was my homie, man. Like, you don't get too many friends like in the industry. And
see, I know when you say it like that, that's your homeboy. When you say it like that's my partner.
Exactly. Like, Currency, that's one of my partners.
Yeah.
Like, so you got a couple people who you feel that type of way about. And we came up together. We were on the same Double XL cover.
That was a legendary cover.
Yeah.
Well, J. Cole was on that cover. Yeah, Cole was on there.
Was it 10 for 10, something like that?
Fuck, I forget. There was a lot of niggas on there, though.
Or Juice Man. OJ Juice Man.
I think Big Sean was on that cover.
Yeah.
Man was on there. J-Rock was on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a lot of niggas on that cover. But yeah, it was cool. That was the time we was all coming up. We were hustling. We were couch surfing. We were sleeping on couches. Some of us had Louis. Some of us had not so Louis. So it was cool, man. It was fun, man. It was a good time to be a young rapper.
Yeah.
Yeah, yo. And even just coming up and seeing his transition, you know, it's fucked up. He was taken away from us, but he was definitely about everything that he said that he was about.
I got a chance to, you know, meet him in like 2009, 2010. And like you said, if you've seen him and really seen him, you see his involvement and talking about every level of that, but always getting to that next level quickly.
Yeah.
Because he was a smart dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Second album, ONIFC, arrived December 2012 with a top single, Work Hard, Play Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any pressure to follow up a debut? Was something better after that?
I didn't feel like there was any pressure for me. I think the label probably felt some pressure or something like that. But I just like to create. And when I made that album, I was in a really good creative space. I was listening to a lot of like old school, like Marvin Gaye shit. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to make something that musically just stood out to me. And of course, like, I wanted my fans to get it too, but I was just trying to impress myself. So it was really based off of my life and where I was at and my experiences and the thing I was going through. And yeah, I felt like I got it across. And then like later on in life, it's crazy to hear people like go through some of those same experiences and be like, oh, I just now figured out what you was talking about. This that ONIFC shit right here. I'd be like, yeah, yeah, for sure.
You caught a little late, but at least you caught it.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us where Taylor Gang came from, the origin of that. Because you really made that kind of your thing.
Mm-hmm. So Taylor Gang was just it just started off as the homies. I'm the youngest out of everybody, so I couldn't even get in the club at certain points. And they were the ones really in the club popping bottles and, you know, paying the DJs to play the records, grabbing the mic and going crazy. And so that's what I seen coming up. And that's just what I wanted to do. So as soon as I was old enough, 19, I had a chain and I was in the club with my niggas and we was going crazy. So it was just really about the party life and the excitement and making that music. And we were all from the same neighborhood. So it was like everything we did was the same. We all talked the same. We dressed the same, and when we walked into the room, it was just like, you know, you knew what it was.
Right.
So we just took that attitude on the road, and as it spread, it just became more of a lifestyle of just doing whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we met more and more Taylors nationwide, whether it be Chicago, Detroit, Louisiana, Atlanta, L.A., Toronto. Like, you know what I mean? There's Taylors everywhere. So it just, I mean, even out of the country, Brazil, fucking UK, everywhere, it just became a lifestyle in a brand.
I thought it meant the way y'all rolled y'all joints, because I heard you on a couple of y'all saying smoking Taylors.
Yeah, smoking Taylors.
Yeah,
that's
an
old school term too.
Yeah,
Bay Area niggas, they call a joint a Taylor.
Yeah. Mac Dre and Mac Marr used to say that, smoking on a Taylor. Yeah.
When did you fall in love with the plant?
I started smoking weed early. I usually don't say what age because I don't want to inspire anybody to, you know.
I was 14 when I started.
Yeah, I started smoking real young.
Yeah.
But on an everyday basis, though.
12.
Consistently?
12.
That's for real?
That's
damn.
Every day.
That's gangster. That
every day.
Yeah.
And, yep.
That's crazy. Yeah, I don't say my smoking age, but it was young. And I think, you know, it was crazy because I was in the studio. Like, I used to sell weed. I used to sell it to, like, white kids and shit like that. So that's how I learned about it. But I was in the studio, and a nigga told me, he was like, bro, like, you're hard. Like, you could rap your ass off. But as soon as you start smoking weed and rapping, he was like, you're going to go to the top. Mm. I was like, man, I don't need that shit, bro. I'm blah, 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 bro. As soon as I started smoking weed and rapping, that's when it happened. Like, my association with the weed and the music, I heard shit that I never heard before, and I started, like...
You got in your zone.
Yeah, it was like the under the real music, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just a surface-level thing anymore. And that's what made me really fall in love with weed is the relationship with music that it goes mm-hmm. together.
You talked about kind of the evolution. You were someone, I remember, we were talking about this before, but you convinced, I remember me, you, and Snoop were doing something somewhere, but you were like, you guys got to smoke paper, you got to smoke paper. We were both smoking Swishers at mm-hmm. that time. I was 20 years in on Swishers because joints never really worked, but mm-hmm. you kept pushing on it. So I tried it, and bro, haven't went back since. I was probably like, 6 years ago.
Yeah, proud of you.
Because I didn't... proud of you. You know what I mean? But you talk about your evolution of kind of with the plant, how it's kind of started as you selling it and then the homie telling you and it took you to another place, but it's really become a real part of your life now.
Yeah, yeah. I think we all started smoking weed like relatively the same. It's just with the homies. Like, you probably got a parent or something like that who smokes weed, so you mm-hmm. smelled it in the house before. And it was really fucking bad back in the day. Like, that shit, you used to have to hide, like, for real. You mm-hmm. couldn't just smoke weed out in the open. And that's where I come from with it, where it's like, you buy a little sack and split it with the homies. And as time went on, we smoke a lot of weed in Pittsburgh. So just having, like, a little A for a quarter wasn't enough. You had to have a zip. Mm-hmm. Like, so we're burning ounces. Like, you got a zip, I got a zip. That's yeah. the session right there. Right. We're all going, and we're smoking it all. Like, nobody's saving anything.
Fuck you mean.
Exactly. So as time goes on, we started, you know, branching out, going different places and finding better fucking weed. Me, I didn't like blunts. Like, I didn't like the taste of them. I didn't like how they made my clothes smell. Mm. I didn't like how they made me feel in the morning. And I was like, if I could fucking just smoke weed and not blunts, like, that would be awesome. And then that's when I bumped into Spitta, and he was on his papers. Like, and my mom had papers, but I didn't associate it with, you know, niggas. Like, you'll never see the homie smoking no papers. But when I got with him, he was like, yo, bro, I hate blunts as well. Like, mm-hmm. let's just smoke papers. Let's, like, come up with our own rules. Not be like anybody else. And, you know, just fucking smoke healthy. Like, just smoke clean. And that was the thing. Like, we documented it. We put it out there. We went around and spread the good word to everybody else. And eventually, Pot Smoke cleaned up. Yeah, nah. In the last 10 years, weed is cleaned up. The idea of weed is cleaned up.
Absolutely.
A lot of different people who weren't into it before are into it now. It's an essential business. Mm-hmm. People aren't as scared of it. It's recreational in a lot of different places. And yeah, I think that's what the main thing is. People's thoughts about weed just have mm-hmm. to change.
Mature,
yeah. Like, and when you're just thinking about, like, niggas rolling around smoking blunts, you know what I mean? It's not that inviting. But, you know, you're having little fucking tea parties and fucking edibles and fucking gummies and shit. It's all good now.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. And everybody get high.
Everybody got their thing.
Yeah, want to get high.
There's medical research backing it up now. That's why I think it's more acceptable. But Tucker, you've turned your passion into a business. Talk to us about Khalifa Kush and all the stuff you're doing in the cannabis space.
Yeah, that's basically what it is just cleaning up the look of it, the packaging. People love pre-rolls, people love mm-hmm. edibles, people love lotions and tinctures, and it's just there's way more uses for herb as a plant than just the way we like to just put fire to it.
Bath bombs, all mm-hmm. all that type of stuff.
You know what I'm saying? So it's using it as an ingredient and you know, spreading it all across the board as opposed to just, you know, bagging it up and selling it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, talk to me about something, because we've all been consumers. We're all fathers as well. Have you had that conversation with your son yet about cannabis and when he should or can or anything like that?
I try not to talk to him about when he can, because that's a, I don't know. I that's, it's hard to call it. Like, you know what I mean? But we definitely talk about that shit just so he knows and he's fully aware. And I think it's important that you educate the kids early on it, because our education on it early was, yo, it's bad. It's going to make you a fucking idiot. You're going to not be successful. Like, let's switch that around. Yeah, like,
change the narrative.
It's medicinal. You don't even have to smoke it. You can grow it. You know what I'm saying? There's all different types of alternatives where you can benefit off of it, where you don't just have to just block it out of their life like it don't fucking exist.
Right.
So that's my main goal with him, is to just, you know, be realistic about it.
Yeah, see, because he's what, 8?
Yeah, he's 8.
So I remember when the twins were 9, I remember I put them to bed one time, and then they looked out their window and saw me smoking. So the next day they came down, they're like, Dad, you smoke cigarettes? And I'm like, damn, do I tell them the truth or not? And I'm just like, nah. So I went for it. I'm like, nah, it's a joint. And they're like, what's that? And I'm just like, well, you know, Daddy doesn't really drink and I can't take painkillers, but my knees and my back are always sore from basketball. So when I smoke the joint, it takes all the pain away and I can sleep. And I'm like, oh, and then Carter, one of the twins, is like, well, Dad, you know, I sprained my ankle. When can I smoke?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it came like, right. It was an instant, like, fire back. Like, when can I? I'm like, oh, you got to be older. He's like 30. He's like, oh, yeah, 30. I said, like, oh, yeah, I can wait till 30. But like I said, to me, and I reiterate what you said to me, I would rather educate them, because you never know what their friends are telling them, what they're seeing on the internet, or any of the stigmas they made me listen to. So I like to have a real, even if it may be too early, but just at least if you visit the conversation, you know, next time you come back around, it's going to be something he's ready to talk about.
So absolutely.
That's important. I think that's important as parents.
You collaborated with Tyler Yahweh?
Yeah.
And Gunna. On the song, All the Smoke. A lot of people thought that, wanted it to be our theme song, and thought it was our theme song. How that came together?
Y'all should do that.
All you got to do is sign off on it. We good.
I got you.
Yeah.
That was Tyler's idea. Tyler's like he's up-and-coming artist. I always fuck with, like, the young homies on their way up.
Facts.
That's been a main goal and, like, point of mine, is just to always, you know, reach out. And I do verses for free. I don't even charge motherfuckers.
That's dope.
Yeah, so it's like, when you get your number one record, run it back, homie. Yeah, yeah. But nah, it's the little homies, and not to call him a little homie like that, but right. That's the young homie. Mm-hmm. And we got to use our platform to help each other out. So the same way he's being a new artist and using his platform to keep me relevant, it's like me as an established artist, or a GOAT, or what people, you know, consider it. It's like an even transaction, in my opinion.
You know who does that well is Unk.
Yeah, Snoop, for
Snoop
sure.
Snoop is very good at, and that's why part of his longevity is being able to stay relevant with the young people. It's important to keep your ear to the ground. We talked about this when you were outside, just the excitement of kind of getting back to life on the road and performing again, and you're acting and doing all stuff. But talk to us particularly about getting back on the road and doing music.
Yo, I'm actually like fucking scared as fuck. It's crazy. Like, I'm anxious, I'm nervous. This is weird. Because I feel like that hustle is like muscle memory. And you gotta be in it to feel it and know what it's like. But just on the outside looking in, you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. You know you're about to like have fucked up flights, like shitty food, be sleeping crazy. I mean, it's not that bad for me, but I've got used to being comfortable, you know what I mean? Right. So anything outside of that comfort zone is like, it's like a red flag a little bit, you know what I mean? But I know when I get into it, this is what I'm made for, this is what I do. So I'm definitely, you know, ready to do it. But am I excited about it? I don't know. It's a lot of fucking work.
Absolutely. And congratulations for your residency in Las Vegas. Talk to us about that.
Thank you. I appreciate it, yo. Dre's, they always look out. I do Dre's in Vegas, and I do the White Club in Dubai. And they let me DJ. I got a DJ name. It's DJ Daddy Cat. I've been doing that for like three.
DJ Daddy Cat.
Yeah, I've been doing that for like, five years now. I'm 5 years in the game.
Hell yeah, I like that.
Not Cat Daddy, but Daddy
it's
Cat.
Daddy, Daddy Cat. Cat. Yeah. So I performed the night before, and then I DJ the next night.
Two checks.
Yeah. Double up.
Come
yeah.
on, man. You can't beat it.
Yeah, yeah.
What's one thing you missed about performing in front of the crowds, though, on the road, sold out venues?
Just the real interaction. You get to feel it. You get to see people just scream and their eyes light up and performing new music. I love to do that as well. I haven't gotten the opportunity to perform anything unreleased or anything new. Just get that party. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I feel my stage performance is. It's not only like songs that you already know, but it's an experience. So you might hear some shit. I might throw some shit on and just start freestyling. I might make up a chant based off of this side of the crowd.
Right.
Like, yeah, it's just going off of everybody's energy. Right. This dude might punch somebody in the fucking head over here. Like, that shit hypes you up when you on stage. Like, you just love that shit.
That's dope.
Yeah.
How involved are you in selecting the acts that travel with you on tour?
Oh, we do everything. Me and Will, we like
handpick.
Yeah, we like Pinky and Brain.
Yeah.
We do it based off of ticket sales, of course, because we're on Live Nation. So being a company man, you know, I try to do what's best for
everybody.
For everybody. Right. And they know that they can come to me. Like I said, it's an experience. It's not all about just Wiz Khalifa getting out there and doing his thing. It's experiencing a party. It's hearing some new music. It's seeing somebody that you might have fucking not have seen in a long ass time in this type of, you know what I mean? There's different ways to mix and mingle. And a lot of superstars have come off of our tours. I mean, I could name countless motherfuckers who started out performing in the daytime when the fucking lawn wasn't even full. And now they have their own, you know, sold out arena tours. You dig what I'm saying? And to me, that's a big point of it as well, is to just put everybody on and extend everybody's career and just make this whole thing, you know what I mean, a right. huge that's lifetime motherfucking party.
Talking about tour life, is there one venue, event, arena you remember that you just felt like it was incredible, like life can't be this good?
It was the championship, like right before the Super Bowl in Pittsburgh. And I got to perform at that shit. And they flew me private, like, from one of my shows. So I had a show that night, and they were like, we have to have you come perform Black and Yellow tonight, because if the Steelers win, then we go into the fucking Super Bowl.
Right.
And the game's in Pittsburgh.
Got it.
So I'm like, all right, let's get it. So I flew there. I had Chevy with me. I had everybody with me. It was like a movie, bro. It was like some shit that, you know, you really wish would ever happen.
Right.
Yeah, that was probably like one of my favorite moments out of a lot.
In your hometown.
Yeah, yep.
That's dope.
Swear. You know, like I said, Cam's my favorite rapper, like as far as like lyricism and right. swag and shit like that. But Snoop is probably the person who I model myself after the most. I will watch him just walk in a room and just be like, wow, like that's really that nigga. Like, you know what I mean? And to see that, respect that, I do a lot of research. I watch like a lot of documentaries and backstage stuff like that. So I will watch him on the road and be like, man, I just want a hype man for that nigga. Or I just want to like
right.
just be the young homie. Like back then, it's like, yo, I would just like roll weed for that nigga if I could just be
that's
next
how
to
we
him.
Were. We just want
to
yeah. smoke with him.
Yeah, like I would do anything. And I feel like there's a lot of people who feel like that, but you know, to really put those intentions out there and then to see it happen. And Snoop took me in, you know, under his wing immediately when I moved out here to L.A. One of the first things he did was, like, you know, get a crib around the corner from my spot. We're going to record at this studio. We're going to shoot this movie. We're going to make this album.
The grind.
Yeah, man. It was like, damn, like, instantly. It wasn't like, yo, we're gonna get high and fucking eat junk food all day. It was like, yo,
business.
It's time to make a moment out of this. So that's what I mean by I model myself after him, because I see, you know, his position in the game and still how hard he works and what he does. And yeah, just moving forward, it was like, yo, I'm on tour with this nigga. I get to share the stage with him every night. Like, he goes.
Y'all challenging each other,
and
too.
Then, yeah, like, I was about to say, he goes, I go, I go, he go. And, like, the crowd's partying. And, of course, I know his motherfucking words because I'm a fan. Like, everybody.
We all are.
Any fan, like, would get up there and sing that shit with all of their heart. So, that was, like, the most, like, gratifying, like, wow.
Y'all ever do another Mac and Devin? Me and Matt need to be in that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're going
to
do one.
You know what I mean? We need to be in that.
We've been writing it for years. We just...
Going through
us
in there.
He got shit going on. I got shit going on. So, you know, we just got to get in the room and really make that shit happen. But I executive produced a whole album for him that we're going to put out. Of course, we're going to do the soundtrack for Mac and Devin, too. And, yeah, we'll throw y'all in the movie.
Tell me how instrumental... in your life he was, though. So it sounded like he taught you your grind, you modeled, you know, someone you modeled your game after. But how instrumental was it?
You saying that, why?
Like, how, just explain to everyone how important he was in your journey through this space.
Oh, so Snoop is fucking rare, especially in the rap game, for the simple fact that there's nobody currently who can say that they have their second coming of them, who's like successful, killing it, went on tour with them. Everybody kind of competes or hides the keys to the game and doesn't really show the homies like what's really good. But Snoop will put me on to plays. Like, he'll be meeting with the dude from Raising Cane's and be like, you know who y'all need to get in business with? Wiz. And he'll call me, FaceTime me, yo. Wiz, I'm sitting here with the nigga from Raising Cane's right now.
That's how we are.
Bruh, that's crazy, bro. Yeah. Like, that's real ass shit. A lot of people in this business won't do that.
Right.
And to have a big homie who's not only a legend, but isn't scared to put you up on game and bring you up, use his platform.
It's not a competition.
No, none of that. All positive reinforcement. And we chop it up, bro. Like, you've been to the compound. We just show up the compound. Chill. We smoke.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to get away from the house or whatever is, just go kick it.
Just go kick it in the mothership.
It's a vibe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's been very instrumental in just my sanity.
In life. Not because, he's been through everything. I mean, he's been a big, for me to be such a big fan, then meet him at UCLA and then us become friends. You know, when you really look up to someone and then get in this space, it's just like you have such a long journey, but it's just like, damn, that's Snoop.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we're doing charity football games together, and
right.
He knows my kids and do all that. It's just like you kind of have to pinch yourself sometimes because he is just so cool and welcoming and how a real OG should be.
So I do this thing. We perform at amphitheaters, and in any amphitheater, there's the VIP.
Mm-hmm.
That's the seats. There's the pit. Like, that's the most.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the lawn in the back. That's, like, the cheaper seats. The most people are actually in the lawn, though.
Right.
But if you're ever in the lawn and you watch the show, you either got to look up at the screen the whole time. Yeah, you just got to look at the screen the whole time. Because the actual person, the performer, is like this
big.
Fucking big.
Okay.
You can't fucking see him. And I was always in the lawn when I was, attending a concert. So this was an idea that I came up with being on stage. It was like, what if we put another stage back there by the lawn? And I could run from up here back
up there
and go perform like a few songs for them and shit. So that's what I usually do during my tour. So I'm up on stage halfway through, we'll black it out, put some shit on the screen, and I'll run over and then they'll hit the lights and then boom, I'm in the lawn. Yeah, and they're going crazy. I'm doing this shit with Snoop and he's like, yo, what the fuck? He's like, first of all, I never done no shit like this in my motherfucking life. Second of all, we got about less than a minute to get all the way up there. I'm trying to run up here. He's like, bruh, like, he's like, I'm a little bit older than you, fam.
Right, straight up.
But he sucked it up, and we did it, and we killed it.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of,
a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
What's the one piece, the best piece of advice he ever gave you?
Best piece of advice he ever gave me was probably just to be myself, keep doing me. He's like, you know, you're going to be around. And he refers to himself as Snoop Dogg. He's like, you're going to chill around Snoop Dogg, but don't be like Snoop Dogg, nigga. Be Wiz, nigga. I love you because you Wiz. Right. You motherfucking rock star. You work hard. You do this. You do that. You fuck with this audience. You fuck with that audience. He's like, always keep that. Never change it. Never give it up.
We missed this when we were talking earlier because we transitioned, but where were you at and how did you find out about the Nipsey passing?
I was at home when Nipsey passed, and I found out because I live with people from the neighborhood, OGs from the neighborhood. So as soon as it happened, phones was ringing, and man, it's fucked up.
We spoke on DMX earlier. He's someone you patterned your music after. How important was the way he came and spit to you?
Yeah, DMX to me was like a, he was just so passionate about his music. He was raw. His flow was infectious. His beat selection was crazy.
He forced you to feel it.
Yeah, in person, he's such a good dude. I have family from New York, and he reminds me of my real family, like just outgoing, just a, you know what I mean? Just a great spirit, a great dude. And when I was younger, you remember I told you I started listening to rap, like, you know, in like second, third grade. Well, like hardcore rap in second, third grade with my uncles and shit. So I had DMX's first album, but then I lived with my mom when I was in Pittsburgh, but then I went to live with my dad in Japan. And he actually like found my whole CD collection and was like, what the fuck is this? Like, why are you a kid listening to this? And he just took all my shit and like, I thought he threw it away, but he took all my shit and he was listening to it. And some of it he fucked with and some of it he didn't, but he really fucked with DMX. And he sat down and told me, like, as a kid, I remember vividly, he was like, yo, all that other shit you was listening to is trash, but I'll allow you to listen to this one because he's saying this and he's talking about this and it actually means something. So, like, not only did, you know, he connected with my pop and, like, I was able to, you know, enjoy his music as a kid because of his realness and his rawness. Yeah,
that's dope.
I got a crazy story about DMX. I'm a sick DMX fan. I got a tattoo from when he say, my life ain't long. I thank God my last breath so my life ain't wrong. And I ain't ever met him. 2 weeks before he died, I bumped into him in Icebox Jewelry. 2 weeks before he died.
Damn,
and it was just crazy that I got a chance to meet him before passed.
It was crazy before he passed because I felt like he had touched a lot of people right before he left. There's a lot of people who got to see him in his last couple moments, and he was happy.
Right.
Yeah. Like, when I seen him, he was in great spirits. We listened to music. We was with Swiss, and we was at Snoop's compound, and we just chopped it up. It was just genuine fucking just real game, you know what I mean?
Rest in peace.
Yeah, I remember giving him a lot of weed in Atlanta one time, too. Just rolling joints from him back to back and sending them to his dressing room.
Burning it down.
Yeah, yup. He was smoking hella back then.
So your versatility doesn't limit you from doing other things outside of music. You're in the acting space now. How did you initially get into acting and how much were you enjoying it?
I first started acting with Snoop. And I would say, like, my introduction to the game was kind of theatrical with my day-to-days and just everybody seeing behind the scenes and me being more of a personality as well as a musician. So the transition to, you know, making actual movies, it was kind of natural and just fun. And it's all an experiment to me, is to just see how far I could take this shit and what I can actually do.
All growth.
Yeah. For real. Like, yep. I'm inspired by a lot of different movies and just people's moments that do shit. So it's like, you can't be scared. Like you said, just put yourself in that box. You have to just go with the freaking flow and use the tools that you have. And, you know, one of those tools is my personality, my fucking ability to remember shit, and just being cool on screen, you know what I mean? So I want to utilize that. I want to have fun, and I want to make other people happy. And I know that them seeing me on screen doing different roles and just, you know what I mean, just fucking doing whatever. I think I know that's going to be good for everybody. I also have the voiceover things that I do as well. I love voice acting too, because it just gives me opportunity to be like whatever the fuck I want to be.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
we're trying to do to. Some animated cartoon stuff between me and him.
Yeah, right, you got to do it,
so
bro.
It's fun, man. And we would do our own voices.
Yeah.
You spoke on Duncanville earlier. Talk to us about Dickinson and what part you play in on that show.
Yeah, well, let's go back to Duncanville, because Duncanville is on Fox. So, yeah. Dickinson's on Apple Plus or Apple TV, which is cool. I like Apple, but Foxes.
Right, you know. Talk to him then.
But Dickinson is, we're in the second season just dropped, and we're about to start shooting the third season. And we had touched on it earlier. They had came up with a character. So it's about Emily Dickinson. She's a poet, and she was obsessed with death at the time. And a lot of her poetry was really dark and just fucking cynical. So this particular show, it's not really a comedy, but it's crazy how they flip it, because it's set back in that time, but they use a lot of current shit, like music and just jokes and just shit that people would resonate with right now, but they do it with the story for back then. Mm-hmm. So in the story, she's infatuated with death, and they made death an actual person, and that's me. It's like a smooth, I get to smoke weed, I ride around in a chariot, I got ghost horses, and, you know, I'm playing fucking, you know, Marvin Gaye or some lowrider music or whatever at the time. And it's really just a play off of who I am just back in that time. Mm-hmm. It's like a smooth, you know, fucking male interest to her. And it's cool, it's fun.
You get paid for it.
I get paid for it. I get to, you know, fucking excite people as death. It's really interesting to see how... See, that's my nerd mind working. Like, I go there and they think I'm just acting, but I'm looking at the cameras and how they set up scenes and how you fucking actually shoot a show. I'm like, all right, so this is a show for Apple. I'm going to take all the notes from here, and I'm going to bring that back, and I'm going to start shooting my shit like that.
Right.
Hell yeah.
Come on, man.
So I'm happy to be in the room as far as that goes.
Talk to us about Duncanville.
Yeah,
Fox.
That's that real TV right there.
It's big time.
Yeah, yep.
That's it.
It's a it's kind of a kid show, but it's more mature. It's like a Family Guy type of situation. And that's another one where I'm just bringing the coolness to the show.
You get to be you.
Exactly.
It's important. It's fun.
Yeah.
The Fighting League.
Yeah, PFL.
Talk to us about that and how you kind of got in, because I kind of followed your journey. Like, I've been a fan, and we got to meet a while ago, but you came in frail, and then you started getting in training yourself and eating right, getting your mind right. It looked like you gained some muscle. Mm-hmm. Like, talk to us how your fascination and your own kind of health and wellness led you to this.
Yeah. So I was never a real, like, a professional athlete. Like, I never worked out or anything like that. I played ball in the hood like anybody else. But I never, you know, had a regimen, eating right, working out, sleeping, doing recovery, this, that, and the other thing.
Athlete.
Yeah, exactly. That's real athlete shit. And I respect professional athletes, because it takes so much to discipline yourself and live your life. You know what I mean?
That balance.
Exactly. It's a really, really crazy balance. And to not get injured, or to, you know what I mean? Just to be in the right mind state, it's a lot. And it's different than music because when you're being creative, you get to just wake up and smoke weed and take a shot and, you know, smack a chick on the ass and make a song about it, bro. Like,
Jack
it,
did that when I played hoop too. Jack.
Nobody fucking cares. Like, it's like that's acceptable behavior right. when right. you're a rapper.
That's but your lifestyle.
Yeah, when you're a professional athlete, you have to like really, you know what I mean, walk that line.
There has to be a time and place for that.
Right. Exactly. So I have a lot of respect for it. And in the past few years of my life, training martial arts and mixed martial arts and you know, just learning about the science of the body and things like that. It's definitely taken a high priority and it's opened up a lot of business opportunities as well. There's a league called the PFL, the Professional Fighting League. And it's basically an alternative to the UFC where it gives each fighter a chance to earn points throughout the season. And then you have the playoffs, and then you have the championship, and that's who gets the belt. And you also get to fight for $1 million. Mm. So it's not really based off of a popularity contest. It's really actual stats. Mm-hmm. And we have fighters who are on the come up who are going to become superstars, and then we have fighters who have actually been in the game for a little bit, maybe didn't reach that point, but it's like, yo, I'm trying to, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? I want to compete.
Right.
I want to make some money, and I want to have right. a shot at still, you know, being that nigga. So, or that chick. So, you know, it's good for everybody. It's good for the fans. And for me, you know, my dedication to health and fitness, it kind of just led me down that journey. I linked up with Jay Glazer at Unbreakable and started training with Ernie Reyes, who's like a legend in the game, and a lot of other, you know, freaking champions who kind of just got me sharp and to the point where I'm able to even just look good on camera.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than actually looking good on camera, I could actually bang too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really for, you know what I mean? That's mm-hmm. just for sport, and that's just to, you know, you practice the technique enough. You need to actually right. be able to use it. But, you know, I've worked a long time to be able to, you know, be confident in both of those things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Kevin Hart is a part of that as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how is it, what kind of situation, how is he a part of it? How are you guys?
It's essentially the same thing. I'm more like a creative director.
Okay.
Where you just gonna see me just like hyping shit up, you know what mm-hmm. I mean?
The musical aspect.
Music, yeah, entertainment.
So everyone's kind of in there, do what you're good at.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like just hyping it up and mm-hmm. whatever they really need, I'm that guy. And Kevin is more financial mm-hmm. and also his platform is different than mine. So it's just going to take it to, yeah, you know what I mean?
It's a good combination.
If he's in a movie and they have a mixed martial arts scene, instead of having whatever company on the floor, it's going to be
mm-hmm.
PFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Shit like mm-hmm. that. Just easy. Not real, nothing too crazy, but we all do our part to lift the company up.
Absolutely.
What's your thoughts on Mayweather-Paul?
I like it. I like the Mayweather-Paul shit. I like the whole celebrity boxing thing. I think they're getting it together. They're making it events better for the fans. I think the fights are going to get better and better. Well, of course, Mayweather's not going to get in there and try to beat the shit out of Logan Paul. And like, of course,
I think he is now after taking his hat and all that.
I think you guys are brainwashed and the hype has been working on you.
Really?
But good job.
You think so?
Bro, that's all hype. It's a hat.
Yeah, but Floyd's...
You never seen Floyd with hair.
Yeah, Floyd's been working on his hair piece.
His rug was kind of... His hair looked like some kicked up carpet.
Jake Paul is a genius.
Oh,
say, bro, grow your hair out. Look crazy. Like, we about to go viral, fam. Let's do this. Let me show you how to do this.
You think it's all a part of the plan?
You done this before. I'm going to show you how to do this now. This new game. And nobody's going to get hurt. That's the cold part, because ain't nobody finna get hurt.
He caught a black eye, though. It was all...
Did you see actual footage of the black eye, or did you just see a scruffy eye?
We got a homeboy here who works here, who real cool with both of them, and he said he got fucked up. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, you don't want to hear it.
Yeah. He ain't buying it.
Dig in your pockets, man, you know? Dig in your motherfucking pockets, because that's what they want.
Yeah, exactly. That's the game.
That's exactly what they want.
That's the game.
Buy into it.
Yeah, that's the game. I dig it.
I ain't mad at it. Yeah, but we're going to be out there, right?
We're there.
Of course. Yeah. It's in Vegas.
It's showtime.
Miami.
Miami. It's showtime.
It's in June.
Come Ocho Cinco
us.
Fighting.
Yeah, come fuck with us.
When is it? What's the date?
We bringing Wiz with us.
What's the date? Bringing Wiz June 6th. With us.
Yeah, I could leave Vegas and I could go down there.
Go.
You gotta go,
oh,
bro.
Wow.
M-I-A-O.
Mm-mm. I ain't been to the Yams in a year either. It's been a while. That'll be a good time to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? See you again.
Oh, yeah.
11 times platinum. A song that went, unfortunately, right along with the tragic loss of Kobe Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that song, how it came about. Obviously, it had a meaning too with, why am I forgetting his name?
Paul Walker.
With Paul Walker. Paul Walker. Rest in peace, Paul Walker. But talk to us about how important that song is and just the process of coming up with it.
That song, for sure, biggest song of my career.
One of your moments you're talking about.
Yeah. And it just, like, being in the airport in Korea and hearing motherfuckers singing, you know, the hook and the verse and shit like that, where they don't even speak English.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that type of shit is crazy. You can think that your song is going to do that, but for it to actually happen, see, it's just like, all right, wow. And the process for making it was cold because they came to me, the people from Fast and Furious and Warner and Atlantic, they came to me and they were like, you know, we're trying to put this song together and your verse is going to be one of probably like eight. You know what I mean? They're like, we want to make this like a compilation song. And Charlie's hook was just supposed to be just like this, like the reference. And they were like, we're going to get this artist on the hook. We're going to get this verse from this person and that. And I was like, all right, cool. So I just wrote my verse and just sent it in, you know, with no thought about it or whatever. I'm like, it's a soundtrack. It's a little bit of money, like, cool. And then they were like, nah, we want you to do the whole song. And I'm like, all right, cool. So I wrote another verse. And they're like, well, we like this part of this verse, and we like that part of that verse, so can you flip this, and can you flip? I'm like, oh, I know what's going on here. Y'all turning this to a motherfucking production. So in my head, I'm like, just be available. Be ready for every little step. If these motherfuckers tell you that they don't like one bar, just be available. Be ready to change it. And it was kind of a process of like tweaking the song for a few months. And then, you know, we shot the video before we even released it. And along with the release and just the song coming out, it just took off. It did what it went crazy. Mm-hmm. And the message behind it. And of course, the Paul Walker thing. And it just really, really, like, I don't know. I had no idea that they was about to go that crazy with it. But yeah, it did everything that. All the energy that we put into it, it did everything that it was supposed to do. Yeah. And the fans made it go crazy. It was freaking number one for, I think, 14 weeks. It's, I don't know how many times, platinum. And it's the only rap video at however many billion views that it has.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the first rapper to ever get a billion views on YouTube as well. So it helped me make history
in a
lot of different ways. And it touched so many people.
Absolutely. Talk about your tribute that you and Charlie did.
For Cope. Yeah, man. That was big. I was actually in Miami the night before because it was Super Bowl weekend. And the Super Bowl was in Miami, so it was just a fucking craze fest. I had a whole week booked down there to be in Miami to work and, you know, work. And I was like, they hit me last minute, was like, yo, we're doing, because of course nobody fucking expected that shit to happen. Mm-hmm. And then there was the home game. It was like the first home game.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you know, we want you to do it. And I'm like, I'm in Miami, of course I'm gonna fucking do it. I don't give a fuck what I gotta do. Like, I'll jump on a jet, blah blah blah. Charlie just so happened to be in Miami too, so we both got on the same jet the next day and just flew out and knocked it out.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that was just such an honor and such like a, I wouldn't have been at the crib like, yo, I wish I could do the fucking tribute for, you know what I'm saying? Like,
this happened.
That was just a beautiful ass thing. It was a great opportunity. And you know, you could, couldn't ask for better stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Just to hold it down and to kind of put people at ease about a situation.
What was the energy like in the arena that night?
So it was like quiet, like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like a hoop game, but nobody was really there though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what it felt
nobody
like.
Nobody wanted to be there.
Yeah, it felt full, but it didn't feel like nobody was there.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
You ever met Kobe? You ever seen him play?
Yeah, I never seen him play, but I got to meet him a couple times.
Yeah.
Always a cool ass dude, bro. Oh, yeah. Like, just great energy, smiling, very welcoming. I do a lot of charities and things like that, and I will always see him at those events, mm-hmm. things for single fathers and things for families and things to help out, like, real-ass situations. Like, Kobe would be there. Mm-hmm. And even, like, just fucking partying. Like, I seen him at, like, Puff Daddy's house. Like, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Just mm-hmm. kicking it.
Right.
But yeah, he's a cool dude.
Mm. Rest in peace.
Yeah, RIP for sure.
You talked about fatherhood. Current state of hip-hop, and how do you, you kind of touched on it, but what kind of your way of staying relevant in this space as you also cross over into to music and music and film, mm-hmm. television and film, excuse me?
I look at music like music is always young. It's like a baby that never grows up. And if you try to mature it too much, then you'll be lost in the sauce. So I enjoy everything, and enjoying and digesting are two totally different things.
Completely different things.
So, you know, everything that, you know, it's not all being processed,
right?
But I enjoy it. I love it. It's fun. It's good. It's good for kids. It's good for people's families. It's making a lot of people a lot of money. I do want to see the young rappers be a lot safer. Mm. I see a lot of violence and a lot of fuck shit that it's not even really about. And it's like, we do music to get away from that shit and get out of that. Right. And I'm a fond believer of, as soon as you become an entertainer, nigga, you're an entertainer. Like,
yeah, that's over.
Yeah, you ain't no gangster. No, I mean, gangster is taking care of your family.
That's it. Doing what's exactly. Right,
mm-hmm. Making it home safe. That's gangster, like, to me and everybody else who've been through it.
Right, but, really been through it.
Yeah, but, like, all that tough stuff, if you want to be tough, there's a place for it.
Join the fight league. Join your league.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You ain't as tough as you think. Yeah, you ain't as tough as you think.
So that's how I've been a very, very, very big advocate in trying to keep these youngsters safe, try to tell them the right thing. Try to tell them to make the right moves, watch their surroundings, watch who they're around. And, you know, I want to see them live long and game forever.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
So, yeah.
Coming down the stretch, quick hitters. First things that come to your mind.
All right.
Give me your top five rappers from the East Coast and your top five rappers from the West Coast.
Cam. One.
Jay-Z. We talking about East Coast. Now, let me go old school. Big Daddy Kane.
Mm.
Now, let me go sleeper. Cannabis.
Mm. Ooh.
All right?
Mm.
All right?
He snuck that. Ooh. Snuck that one in there.
Cannabis was at LL Neck.
Yeah, Cannabis was ill. And I already said Cannabis for the lyricism. Oh, Nas.
Nas, yeah, of course.
Gotta say Nas.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, congrats on that Grammy.
Absolutely. Congrats, bro.
Yeah, well deserved.
Congrats on a lot of things, man. That man is just hustling.
Yeah. Oh, he's behind the scenes killing it.
Yeah.
He's behind the scenes killing
it. Ring.
I just watched something he just produced the other day.
That Monster?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with ASAP in it.
Yep. He's behind the scenes killing it.
Shout out. No, we got to get
See, he's a Virgo. That's what we do. I'm a Virgo, too. We behind the scenes kill it.
Yeah.
Swiss Beats, you know, very good businessman. Very artistic, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just silent killer, you know? Love that.
Yeah. I ain't mad at
that. All right, so quick hitters, top five, who else?
So now you got West Coast. You gave us your five East.
West Coast, Cube, Sugar Free.
Ooh, shout out Pomona.
Yup. Snoop, Mac Dre.
Ooh, rest in peace.
That's four. Uh-huh. And Burner.
Ooh.
Yeah, yep.
Burner the homie. Cookies.
Burner's a bazillionaire, dog.
Yeah. Oh, he's a monster. Low.
Yeah, Burner's my man. Yeah.
No, we definitely got to get Burner.
Ah, but I got to say Too Short, too.
It's all right. There's plenty of room.
Well, yeah. The West Coast deserves.
Yeah. We can give them 10 if you want. Yeah. I mean, shit.
Keep going.
I mean.
If you could have one artist or group, dead or alive, to collaborate with, who would it be?
Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't done a song with Hove yet, and that needs to happen.
Hopefully.
It's going to happen.
This going viral will happen.
Even if it happens in 10 years, it'll happen.
Eventually. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know he fucks with you. Mm-hmm. Five dinner guests, dead or alive?
Five dinner guests, ODB, all of mine would probably be, they wouldn't even be here no more. Because I could have dinner with the niggas.
Yeah, right.
That's a lot.
right.
Talk about you.
ODB, Bob Marley.
Yeah.
He up there.
I would either say Biggie or Big Pun, but I'm gonna say Big Pun because I know we gonna eat good.
Mm-hmm.
She's gonna eat good with either of them.
Yeah, we gonna eat good. Let's see. Somebody who's gonna put me up on some game, who I could chop game with. Oh, Prince.
Mm.
Yeah, Prince would be dope to invite to the party. And then Rick James, because he's going to bring some bitches.
Come on, man.
Yeah,
Rick James. Can't go wrong with Rick.
James, that's a party right there.
Yes, sir.
Five songs in rotation to smoke to.
Doobie Ashtray, Devin the Dude.
A lot of people don't know that Devin is one of the coldest.
The coldest, man.
That's why I grew up in that area. So
South by Southwest, we got super loaded.
Perfect place to run into him, bro.
Super blown. They didn't really like you smoking out there either.
That shit did fucking throw yank you out of the car.
No, we had.
I seen somebody pass. That was the first time I ever seen somebody pass out on weed. Was at his concert. Like, it was hot as hell in there, and their eyes just rolled in the back of their head. And I was like, what the fuck? I never seen it before, but it's a real thing. Like,
I seen it in the coffee shop right before you came down the waterway. Mm-hmm. They had to take this girl outside, flip her upside down, pour water all over.
Yeah, and
like
her eyes was—it looks
head.
Crazy,
like,
right?
Hey, it's not for everybody.
It's not for
everybody.
It ain't.
I've never seen it. I can't wait to see it.
Come to one of my shows, you'll see it. It looks wild, yo.
Yeah.
So Doobie Ashtray, Footsteps in the Dark, Isley Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Purple Haze by Cam. Friday by Busy and Bone. I think what's that? Three or four?
It's four.
That's four. One more. It's a Nate Dogg song. Fuck. See, now I'm thinking about all of the
One More Day.
I'm thinking about all of the Nate verses, but I can't think about the song. Oh, I'll just do one of my songs.
Yeah.
In the cut.
Yeah.
A Wiz song. There you go.
Can't go wrong with
that.
That One More Day by Nate Dogg is a classic, though.
Yeah,
that One More Day is.
Yeah. A lot of niggas don't even know Nate's album, bro. It's fucking crazy. See, I got Low Riders, so. That's what we ride around. We
Sundays. Shout out RMM.
Yeah, RMM, Rider Gang, Cruise Life. You already know. You been on the cruises?
Hey, show on the way.
When you going to build yours?
I finally got my Bronco. So I got me an OJ.
Come on, man.
It's out there. I just got to get the shit registered. It's hard to register. I put a lot of money into it. Nobody wants to take my... We just got...
So is it already ready to roll?
I've been driving it around low-key. I just don't want to cruise with it yet.
You got beats in there? All right.
I got everything. I got to take the top off that motherfucker.
Bro,
that's the thing.
That's when you bring it to the cruise to test it out.
Yeah.
You don't just test it out. You got to bring it to the cruise. You be like, oh, shit, I got to fix this. Yeah. Oh, damn, fucking thing came off the door.
I know it was a random ass day. Remember the day you guys pulled up? It was him, Said the Entertainer, and who else? Percy, right?
And a couple other.
I was randomly chilling in my house one day in the back, but I just happened to be barbecuing and smoking, watching TV. These motherfuckers just, pull up, open the gate. Like, who's out there? These motherfuckers drive their little hot rods in, and that's when I started fucking with them.
Yeah.
And then found out this motherfucker lived right around the corner from me. I didn't even know.
We about to start it back up.
Rider Gang, shout out RMM. One bar lyric of yours that you'd want to be remembered by?
Oh, fuck.
Well, might have been too deep.
I can't even narrow it down, dog. That's that's cold because it, like I got motivational bars that I would fuck with.
Yeah, and how
I
about
got,
this?
And I got game too. It's like, yo, little niggas need to hear that.
Maybe your favorite song then?
See, that's the thing. I'd be liking to let other people do that. You know? But me personally, my favorite song, I got a song that's called I Still Remember. It was way back. It's on a mixtape I did called Star Power. I was probably like 19, 20 years old when I did this song. But that's my favorite jam that I did.
Is Rolling Papers on a Cardo beat?
I got a song called Rolling Papers too, but I don't know if I got
a song. Okay, it's the song on Rolling Papers. It's the song on, is it Cushion Orange Juice? With Cardo, and I'm trying to think of it.
Are you talking about Mesmerize?
Mesmerize, that's my favorite. That's my favorite song of yours.
Yeah.
That's my favorite song.
Yeah. See, I was gonna think about a bar from that song, but that song is like so much pimping. Like,
that song hard.
It's a lot of pimping in that song.
That song hard. Roll up.
That's funny. Go ahead, Jack.
If you was a fan, and you could have one person on All the Smoke, who would you want to see on the show?
Currency.
Dope. That's my partner. And that's my partner too.
Yeah,
Spitter, Jet Life.
Spitter, bro. You and Currency doing some real shit together.
Get Spitter, man.
Yeah.
That's my boy too.
Yeah, yep.
We need you. Where you at? Man.
We good?
That's a wrap, man. Appreciate you, bro.
That was easy.
Good show,
Appreciate
man.
You, dog.
For sure. Appreciate
you. That's a wrap. Thank our guest, Wiz. You can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform, Black Effects. See y'all next week.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.